authors, writers, dreamers, all. Each day is an invitation to accept the call. I'm Brooke Warner from She Writes.
And I'm Grant Faulkner from NaNoWriMo. You're listening to Right Minded, weekly inspiration for writers. Hello, world of storytellers, and thank you for sneaking away from your novel, your collection of short stories, your epic poem, your memoir, to join us for our weekly chat about all matters of writing. I'm Grant Faulkner, and I've written everything except a vacuum cleaner manual in my life, and I know that someday I will write that vacuum cleaner manual, because everything is out there for me, and I'm joined by Brooke Warner, who I hope has never written a vacuum cleaner manual. Brooke, I'm curious, because every writer I know has a story about some odd writing assignment that they've had to do in their life to make ends meet or for other reasons. What's the oddest or worst thing you've ever had to write?
It's a hard question for me, because I come from such a different area of the writing world than you do. You know, I'm not cobbling together necessarily stuff trying to do writing assignments, and I actually haven't taken a whole lot of writing classes. So the first thing that comes to mind is this high school assignment that I had to do that was about, it was kind of a normal prompt, right? Like, write something that impacted your life in a meaningful way. And I wrote about a statue that was in my house growing up. And I guess the reason that I think of it as odd and interesting is because what ended up happening with that piece that I wrote was that it was really meaningful to me. And it was the piece that my high school teacher eviscerated. And so it stands out to me as probably the piece that was the catalyst to not do more personal writing for about 20 years. So it's not exactly an odd thing, but it was the worst. It turned out to be the worst thing. It's sort of a sad story that I'm getting into.
I know, you're making me sad.
I'm sorry. But I also think those are interesting because of the ways that odd and or sad things stay with you. And it is the first thing that pops to mind. But I don't know, maybe you have a worst or oddest one that's a little more funny.
I actually have many. It's hard for me to choose one. I do feel like it's a strange rite of passage that most writers have to go through, that moment of evisceration or moments. So, I'm sorry to hear that. But I think of one moment in my life, I was house sitting this house in New Mexico, and I was writing my novel, but I had no means of income and I was completely broke. And a friend of mine who was an editor at this tech magazine, which I won't name, in the Bay Area, he gave me assignments so that I could make ends meet. But I knew nothing about technology, and I had to interview these chief information officers at big corporations who were setting up these huge and complicated systems. And so my now wife, Heather, she knew more than I did. And so she would write the questions for me, and I would call up these CIOs on this rotary dial phone and just ask the questions, nothing more, because I knew nothing more. And I'd record the call, transcribe it, and then somehow shape it into a narrative. And I got by with it. But honest to God, I know nothing about the things I wrote about.
I like that, because I think a lot of people are doing those kinds of jobs, and there's kind of a fake it till you make it quality there.
Definitely. And if I kept working in that field, I would still be faking it until I made it. You know, it
would have been, you still know nothing.
Yeah. Faking as a lifestyle. So that's where the vacuum cleaner manual comes in. that's next when I need rent someday. But today, fortunately, we're not talking about writing vacuum cleaner manuals. We're talking about putting your work that you love, into the world. And by into the world, I mean finding your audience by sharing your story far and wide on the internet. We're going to talk to Taryn Matherow, who literally posted his NaNoWriMo novel on Wattpad while he wrote it. And then millions of people ended up reading it. And publishing glory and fame is just that simple, right? No, it actually isn't. It's a huge, I wish it was. It's a huge step to put your work out there. And as a perfectionist author myself, I have a hard time posting my fiction, especially an early draft like Taryn did, because I want to revise it endlessly for years, actually, before showing it to anyone. Still, the internet is out there as a presence and a force, and I think it's inviting us and confronting us with this notion of sharing. And we have to figure out to what degree we feel comfortable with sharing, and whether sharing motivates us or hinders us, or how it exists like a dare. Brooke, I know you've obviously been involved in online writing communities for a long time. Has it changed your notions of sharing your writing?
Yes. Absolutely. And it's interesting because I shared that sad story and didn't realize how connected it is actually to the way in which I share today. In some ways, I think because of that experience of getting eviscerated and then going away from personal writing for so many years and then coming back to a supportive community where there's encouragement to share your work. And it was kind of a healing process if I think about it in retrospect. So now I am very comfortable sharing my writing, but it is because of supportive writing communities that I've been in, obviously, especially in recent years, She Writes, but even before that, just being in the publishing community of Seal Press and lots of women-only spaces that I've been in particular, that are championing other writers. And so when I was an acquiring editor at Seal, a lot of the books that I acquired actually came from blog posts and other content pieces that people had written. And at that time, you know, when I was there, like in the early 2000s, blogging was such a big deal. And we were exclusively nonfiction, right? And so most of those pieces, all of those pieces, in fact, were personal. And so that was a really transformative time in my life because I was in my late 20s and early 30s, and I was witnessing the kinds of work that people were putting online and how important that was to self-expression. And because I was working in women's spaces, how particularly important it was to women's spaces. And I was part of that zeitgeist. And I think it's really carried through to today in terms of what I put online, which is pretty personal at times. And I'm definitely open about sharing my writing process. So I'd love to hear from you, Grant. I mean, what's your evolution on this been?
I am evolving, I think. Thank you for using that word. I'm changing slowly, glacially. I do share my fiction, but only once it's been published in a magazine or journal. So that's a little different. I'm a little more loose with my nonfiction. I don't know why. I like posting essays and I love blogs for this reason. In fact, this year I challenged myself to publish one essay on Medium each week. And I have to say, it's been very gratifying. It's still amazing to me that complete strangers will comment on my posts and that we can get into interesting conversations. I love that direct contact with readers, and it's very motivating for me to write with an audience in mind. I mean, just knowing that there will be a reader, whether it's one reader or hundreds of readers, that really sharpens my words and thoughts. And so I really appreciate that. And so far, fortunately, most of my interactions with readers have been positive, you know, knock on wood. I will knock on wood. Can you hear that?
Heard it.
I sometimes wonder if someone's going to take something the wrong way or just hate something I've written. And I actually don't want to be eviscerated, although I guess that could always happen.
Yeah, I mean, I'll admit that I've had freak out moments when I share certain things online. I have moments of thinking like, oh my God, was that too personal? Was that too much of, you know, something sharing about, you know, mostly my family. But I don't know. Because I'm such a part of my own writing community, I also see it as a personal mandate to be transparent and not to be too secretive. And it's interesting. I think that is a little bit of a, as I was talking about, as a zeitgeist. I mean, there's a real thing about transparency and sharing and openness, and it's part of my personal belief system. So there are certain things that are off limits, of course, but I think that that kind of transparency also makes you seem more accessible. I mean, it makes you more accessible to your community, but of course you have to be engaging. You know, I know a lot of people who just put stuff online and then they don't comment, they don't follow up, and it just becomes kind of a me fest. And so I think the people who are really doing this well online are the ones who are in conversation with their followers or their friends, whatever the case might be. And I actually have been upping the ante lately on Facebook, sharing more than usual intentionally, in part because I'm gearing up to promote my book that's coming out in August. So it's been interesting to see that engagement and to have the conversations. And it's also made me more thoughtful. I feel more thoughtful and like a more engaged human being because I'm paying attention to what I'm putting out, but I'm also paying more attention to what other people are doing and what they care about.
That's so interesting because I've actually noticed you posting more on Facebook and noticed that you have been more personal, which I find fascinating. And I love what you say about how it's your personal mandate. And it's something that I aspire to, I guess. I want to share more because I think there are those benefits. And that's what writing is all about, right? Is kind of revealing ourselves. And I always say the best writing is the writing where the writer made him or herself more vulnerable. So I really admire that. I'm curious, Brooke, since we're talking with Taryn today, have you worked with writers who've literally built their readership online, and then that has helped them get published because they've had these kind of people come magically to their stories.
Yes, for sure. You know, people these days need to build a readership in some capacity. It's different and harder for fiction, I think, but my real expertise in book publishing before starting at She Writes was nonfiction. And you really can't get a traditional book deal if you don't already have quite an online presence. And social media isn't enough. A lot of people think that it is. So writers who have these big followings generally have popular blogs or columns. You know, you're seeing their stuff out in the world in some ways. They have think pieces. You know, maybe they're doing other kinds of things like YouTube or podcasting. So for nonfiction, there's just no question. I think it is super necessary, and it also can be discouraging. So I'm just thinking, to start a blog now in this super crowded space, for instance, is going to be hard for people because it takes a long time to build a readership. So it's just important to remember to stick with it. If you're going to start something, don't just start it and go full bore for a month and then stop. You really want to say, okay, I'm in it for the long haul. It's going to be about consistency over time. And I think it can take years to build a readership. And I'm sure that sounds a little discouraging too, but it's also a truism that things worth working for are hard. So if you want to build a readership, just stick with it and write good content, give it time, and it will pay off.
Yeah, don't give up after a month or 2 months or 3 months. I mean, it might take 2, 3, 4 years.
Absolutely. And we're too much of an instant gratification culture. So I think that people think, oh, I'm just going to go out and do this. I'm going to do it really hard. And then when they don't see immediate results, they go, oh, why bother? And so at least give yourself a year. So Grant, what's the pep talk today?
Yeah, I think this pep talk is actually for me. I hope it relates to somebody else as well. I have a theory about sharing. And so this might be wrong, but I've noticed that writers who have essentially grown up with the internet are much more comfortable sharing in general, and certainly more comfortable sharing early drafts like Taryn did on Wattpad. And I mean, you know, when I watch my kids at school, that's the way schools work these days. Kids collaborate and write papers together and get feedback from the first word of their papers to the last. Whereas when I was growing up, it was like as if we worked on papers in solitary confinement, and we only had one reader who was the teacher at the very end of the process, and we got some, you know, red marks back and a few comments. And so I think I grew up with an entirely different sense of an audience and of sharing than my children do, and that people who grew up with the internet from day one do. And I'm interested in this idea of becoming more comfortable sharing and sharing not perfect work, but imperfect work. I think we all have to find our own comfort zone of when and how to share our work. But maybe if you're someone like me, it's good to share an earlier draft rather than a later draft. So I'm telling myself and listeners who are like me, to share an imperfect draft, just to practice, just for the heck of it. This morning, I actually took my own challenge, and I was writing a very short piece, and I told a friend about it, you know, a month or two ago, and I decided to send him the first draft just to have some eyes on it, not for feedback. And it was nice. It was a good feeling. And I think, like, if you're the opposite, if you share very easily, then you might try writing a story and not sharing it until it's absolutely done and perfect in your mind, and just see how that influences your creative process. How about a green light moment book?
Yeah, and it's a great segue, obviously, because I'm sharing about sharing as well. And a lot of people know the story and the success of the 50 Shades of Grey trilogy. But I think because it's such a huge success story, and because it's so on topic for today, this is today's green light moment. The author E.L. James started this book as a Twilight fan fiction series. And at the time, she was calling it The Master of the Universe. And she was publishing that episodically on fan fiction websites under the pen name Snow Queen's Ice Dragon. And it's probably the most famous example we have of an author who started a book on a fan fiction site and then who got a huge book deal eventually with Random House. And just given the popularity of serialization, I think this is also another interesting aspect of it, that she was releasing her stuff in this episodic way. And we're going to see more of that. We already are seeing more of it. And I just want to note a couple fun facts about this series, you know, which was not particularly well written, but which just caught on fire. And the facts are that in 2012, Amazon UK announced that it had sold more copies of 50 Shades of Grey than it had the entire Harry Potter series combined. And that same year, Random House in the US made enough money on the sales of the book to give every single one of its employees a $5,000 bonus. So this is just one of those crazy stories that's impossible to replicate. But what I like about it is that I admire E.L. James for what she did. You know, she greenlighted her work. She went for it. It was one of those amazing once in a lifetime things that happens. And I still think it's an inspiration. And I love that she did it on this fan fiction site and just kind of threw caution to the wind.
I love that story as well, Brooke. I want to give you one more fun fact. E.L. James's husband, Niall Leonard, is a NaNoWriMo participant.
Nice.
And he's written at least two or three of his own books during NaNoWriMo, and he's on our NaNoWriMo Writers Board.
Oh, amazing.
So maybe we can even have him on the show sometime, and her. That'd be great.
I'd love that. It'd be fun.
Let's go for it. Well, Brooke, I'm sensing that after this heady conversation, our listeners are needing a break. They need to sit down, take some breaths, meditate, post one of their stories online, maybe even sign up for NaNoWriMo. So we're going to take a short break, folks. Starting right now. Welcome back, listeners. I hope you took full advantage of your break. Brooke, what did you do on your break?
Yeah, during that 4 seconds, I was able to write a blog post, send an email, and get some lunch. How about you, Grant?
You use time very well. I took one sip of coffee.
Yeah, I'm working at warp speed over here.
And I think our guest, Taryn Matharu, is working at warp speed as well. I'm super excited to welcome Taryn to Right-Minded. Taryn Matharu is a New York Times bestselling author. He was born in London and, like many authors, was passionate about reading at a very early age. As you might guess, his love for stories developed into a desire to actually create his own. And he wrote his first book when he was just 9 years old. But he didn't stop there. 13 years later, in 2013, he took part in this little novel writing event called National Novel Writing Month, which should actually be called International Novel Writing Month for people like Taryn, who are in London and elsewhere. And he wrote Summoner, a middle grade YA epic fantasy adventure story. And he started uploading the chapters to Wattpad. Now, this was during November while he was writing the novel, as I understand it. And he found a few readers along the way. In fact, a few million readers. He reached over 3 million reads in less than 6 months. And those numbers attracted some savvy publishers. He's now written 5 novels in the Summoner series and 1 in a new series called The Contender. Welcome, Taryn.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I want to ask you, I want to know more about this seminal moment of writing a novel with NaNoWriMo in 2013. You were only 22, which I don't know if you know this, but that's pretty young to be a published author.
Yeah, I guess it is.
It's young to me, at least. Were you thinking that you were going to write a big bestseller when you started NaNoWriMo, or did you just want to have fun writing a novel? And why did you sign up for NaNoWriMo in the first place?
Well, I had finished working at Penguin Random House, where I worked as an intern. And it was while I was there that I started kind of realizing that authors weren't these people that I'd put on a pedestal, people who had gone to very expensive universities and studied creative writing and then waited till they were about 45 to write a book. That was my impression. But I started meeting authors, and they were from all walks of life and all different ages. And I realized that it was something that maybe I could do professionally. And I remember pestering my boss and saying, you know, oh, please let me show some of my work to an editor. And his response was emphatically no. Instead, he said, why don't you put some of your work on this website called Wattpad? A few people have got book deals from success on there. I'm sure the same will happen to you. And I think at the time there were something like 30 million users on Wattpad. And basically only 3 people had got book deals at that point. So it wasn't very likely. And really, he just wanted me to stop pestering him. But I'd finished my time at the company, and I decided I wanted to write on this website called Wattpad. And I had a month to kill before I was going to go backpacking around Australia. So NaNoWriMo just so happened to fall in that month of November, and it just popped up in my newsfeed. And I was like, this is it. This is what I should do. I should try and write 50,000 words of my book in a month. And every day I'll put it up on this website called Wattpad. And hopefully people will feedback. They'll give me encouragement. And it will kind of be a kind of recycled system of writing, get feedback, writing, get feedback. And obviously the rest is history. The first month, so that's by the end of NaNoWriMo, the sample of my first book in the Summoner series, The Novice, had been read 100,000 times. And then after that, it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And that sample that I had shared, because it wasn't an entire book, it ended up, like you said, being read 3 million times in less than 6 months. And I think it's something like almost 8 million reads on the sample now, just on Wattpad. And it was after that that I got book deals and things like that.
It's really an incredible story, turn. And like you said, it's not common. So I'm guessing that that's not something that you were by any means expecting. And so I'd love to hear a bit about what it was like to check the platform itself to see how many reads you get. And what were you thinking? I mean, as this was going on, what was the experience? Did you immediately go to, oh, I'm going to get a big book deal? Or were you just kind of reveling in the idea that so many people were reading your work?
Well, I remember when I started, nobody was reading it. And it was mostly because of the way that Wattpad's algorithm works. You need to update frequently, you need to have short chapters, and you need to have a good read-through rate across the entire kind of set of chapters that you've uploaded. And early on, the algorithm doesn't kind of detect that yet because you don't have enough chapters uploaded. So I remember in that first week, there was this one guy commenting on it, and he was from Indonesia because Wattpad's a global platform. And he went by like Achilles 32 or something. And every chapter I uploaded, he'd write a little comment in broken English. And that was enough for me to keep going because I was like, this guy's enjoying it. He's reading it. And then it went viral after that. But what's interesting is basically with Wattpad, there are many, many books on Wattpad that have hundreds of thousands of reads. So it actually kind of took a while for it to hit me. But you see the books that have hundreds of thousands of reads or sometimes many millions of reads on Wattpad, they've been there for many years. And what was unique about my book was it went viral and grew to that number very, very quickly. And that was because of the frequency that I was uploading, that, you know, Wattpad's algorithm appreciated that. And that's how NaNoWriMo helped me. And I wonder if I hadn't done NaNoWriMo, if the book would have had the same success on that platform.
That's fascinating. I'm curious, since you said that you were initially posting it just hoping for feedback, beyond the one person who was giving you that great encouragement, did you get helpful feedback from others, like constructive feedback on your story itself, or were you just looking for that kind of motivation that comes from readership?
To be honest, I found the feedback usually was, I mean, what I would say wrong. It's kind of like, let's say George R. R. Martin was uploading Game of Thrones and people were saying like, don't kill that person or don't do that because but then the story would be very boring if everything happened perfectly and wonderfully. So, you know, the readers root for the characters, but you're the one who has to give them trials and tribulations. So it was kind of interesting to see how everyone wanted this story where only nice things happened to the main characters and the main characters were super strong and powerful. And, you know, people like, you should do this, you should do that. But it was always to kind of in a direction that I didn't necessarily want to go in. But I will say that the main character, he summons demons. The book's kind of like a mix between Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, and Pokemon, where people can summon demons from another plane, and they're kind of like their pet and companion, and they allow them to do magical spells. And the main character, Fletcher, has a demon called Ignatius. And the name Ignatius came from a crowdsourced kind of question that I asked about midway through the book. What should I name the demon? And people kind of all made suggestions, and I saw a lot of them all had a kind of common theme of Ignis or Ignacio, because, you know, it comes from the word fire. And no one actually suggested Ignatius exactly, but it gave me a great idea for a name. So there's lots of stuff like that. And often people will talk about how much they like a certain character, and perhaps a character that they're really getting on with. As I was writing it, I might have brought them in a little bit more because I could see that people were vibing off that character. So certainly that live kind of feedback was useful, but I don't think it necessarily was so much a kind of crowdsourced story. It was more just kind of getting feedback as you write, and that kind of leading your decisions a little bit more.
That's so cool. And I admire you for your discipline in choosing what to listen to and what not to listen to. I think that's incredibly hard to do, actually. I'm curious how you went from Wattpad to your publishing house. Once you were getting all these reads, did you search for an agent, or did agents contact you, or did you just leap over the whole need for an agent and go straight to a publishing house?
So it was quite a surreal and strange kind of experience. NBC News got in touch with me, and they were doing a piece about Wattpad, and my book just so happens to be the top of the fantasy list. I think it had about 1 million reads at that point. And, there were many books that had 60 million reads, 80 million reads on Wattpad that hadn't had book deals. But the reporter who was writing the story just so happened to like fantasy, and he picked whatever the number one fantasy book was, and he sent me an email. So we had an interview down a terrible, terrible phone connection, and I was so frustrated because I thought this was going to be my big break. And when the article came out, it's funny, the reads didn't spike or anything like that. But what did happen was an audiobook publisher who had seen the kind of article had decided to get in touch with me. And that was when I kind of had to look at what was happening, because it was still a sample and you're not supposed to approach agents with a sample. But I also had an audiobook deal on the table that I didn't want to reject outright. So it was kind of tricky. And I ended up doing probably one of the silliest things that you can do when you're looking for an agent, which was to message some of them on Facebook, which was just a little bit odd. But at the time, I didn't know what I was doing. I would not advise it. But luckily, because the book was so successful, the agents responded very enthusiastically. And they, I got offers of representation within 24 hours. After that, I sent proper kind of emails out to multiple agents. Every single agent I got in touch with offered to represent me. Pretty much all of them responded within 24 hours. There was one who had had a plane journey, but they read it on the plane, and when they got off, which was later than 24 hours, they offered to represent me. But, you know, basically everyone wanted to represent me very quickly.
Taryn, I'd love to go back to the Wattpad thing for a second, because one of the things about this show is about inspiring other writers. And I love this thing about Wattpad and the community writing. And I would love to hear whether publishing on Wattpad changed the way you wrote. You talked a little bit about the way that people gave you feedback and how they shared with you, and it didn't necessarily change any of your story elements. But do you think that your actual writing experience would have been quite different if you hadn't shared it on Wattpad in the way that you did?
I would say for both, because of both NaNoWriMo and Wattpad, my writing style is quite unique and different compared to perhaps more traditional books. And that's because on Wattpad in particular, you have to write short chapters, because the way the algorithm works is every upload counts for you know, a number in that algorithm. So you want to upload many, many pieces. If you do 10,000 word chapters of a 100,000 word book, you only get 10 pieces to upload. If you do 1,000 word chapters, you get 100. So it's in your interest to upload 100 short chapters. So my chapters ended up being relatively short. They're still within a reasonable amount. You know, you'll see books with 500 word chapters, like Dan Brown's, for example. I think that's too short. Most of my chapters are between 1200 and 2000 words long, but they're quite short. The books are very pacey because people are kind of reading episodically. You need to keep their attention. And if you're writing kind of large swathes of prose about crossing a mountain and looking at lakes and things like that, and not much happening, then they lose interest and they drop off. So you have to write quite in a fast paced, kind of action packed way. Many of my chapters end on kind of mini cliffhangers, which is a technique that many authors use, but it's perhaps slightly more pronounced in my work. Those are probably the main differences that happened because of Wattpad and NaNoWriMo.
Well, that's so cool. I learned a lot about Wattpad just from this conversation. But I'm curious, because you've written a lot of novels since you published that first one. And do you still do NaNoWriMo, or do you write within that same kind of goal deadline framework model to keep publishing at the rate you are?
Absolutely. I don't necessarily do NaNoWriMo every year, mostly because the way my publishing schedule works, I'm usually editing during the month of November, just because my books come out in May. So I hand in my subsequent book, and then that gets edited around November time. So I don't, unfortunately, get to participate in NaNoWriMo as much as I'd like to, because I just know I won't be able to keep up. But I do recommend people writing books in short periods of time. I wouldn't necessarily say rush. I wouldn't even necessarily say that NaNoWriMo's speed is for everyone, but I would say that if you spread writing a novel across a year or even two, I think that you don't live in that world as much. You don't immerse your mind in that world. It's not something you're constantly thinking about. And because you're dipping in and out, I feel like books end up becoming slightly shallow. The world's not as fleshed out as it might be. So I almost always write books within a kind of 6 month period. Often 3 to 4 months. The rest of the time is spent doing all the other things that you need to do as an author. I do often basically start the book significantly earlier, but most of the work is done within 3 to 4 months.
Do you have one NaNoWriMo tip that you can impart to our listeners to help them succeed in writing 50,000 words in a month, or a single book in 6 months, as you put it?
I have a series of tips. The tips that I would give to people who want to succeed in doing NaNoWriMo is, firstly, set a daily target. So work out how many days you have left, and then divide it by the total number of words you think your book will be. So if you're writing, say, a young adult novel, maybe 80,000 is a good target. And there's an app called Scrivener that actually does that calculation for you as you write and updates in real time. So I use that a lot. I would also say make your intentions public, that you want to write a certain amount within a month. It's kind of like running a marathon. If you tell everyone you're going to do it, you're kind of almost embarrassed into doing it. Because if you don't, you look kind of silly because you kind of announced it to everyone. So I always find that helps. It kind of helps you be accountable. Finding beta readers is something that you can do. I found Wattpad was kind of my beta readers, but sometimes writing groups will get together and they'll all kind of read each other's work every evening and feedback on it. I'd also say don't edit. And I know that sounds a little crazy, but basically when you're writing at such speeds, if you're constantly going back and tweaking things, you're going to get bogged down and you'll actually find it a lot harder to finish the book. If you have a big structural change, obviously that's going to impact the whole book, then I would say go back and change it. But if it's just kind of editing and making things better, do that at the end. I would say though, if you do have beta readers, maybe give it a quick proofread first before you send it through. The other one is always making a start. It's so important. Basically, every day when you come home, let's say you have homework or you just want to relax after a hard day's work, I would suggest just saying, I'm going to write a few sentences and then I'm going to watch Netflix. Because you'd be surprised how often you're just pulled back in as you write. Some of my biggest word days were days that I was exhausted, but I still wrote a few sentences and then suddenly I was pulled in. And then the other thing is trying, and this is a piece of advice I was given many years ago, and I can't believe people don't talk about it more often. And this applies so much to NaNoWriMo as well, which is trying to finish mid-sentence. In fact, try and finish mid-chapter, even mid-paragraph, because basically when you sit down to write, it takes a while for the writing juices to get flowing. And if you're staring at a blank page of a new chapter, it's hard to jump in. But if you're in the middle of a sentence, you kind of finish that sentence and then you finish that paragraph and then you finish that scene and then you finish that chapter. And it kind of helps you get pulled back in. I'd also say at least do a loose plot, because it's easy to write yourself into a corner, especially when you're just trying to get words out. Sometimes you write stuff without really thinking of the consequences and you end up floundering. So it's good to have some signposts to let you know where you're going. And the last tip, sorry for the many tips, but the last one is keep it fun. Because I think often people will actually find themselves becoming bored of their own book. And that's one of the reasons why people struggle to finish a whole book in a month. And I say, if you are getting bored by the book, then your readers will as well, trust me. So if you're finding it boring, the scene that you're writing, try and spice it up. I'm not saying have a man run into the room with a gun, but you know, try and make things more interesting, because that will help you write more and it'll help your readers enjoy it more as well. And that's it.
Wow, Taryn. Thank you for that. That's a very, very impressive list and super helpful. So we so appreciate you being with us today. And I think that a lot of our listeners hopefully will be inspired to do a program like Wattpad and obviously be inspired to do NaNoWriMo this year too.
Well, thanks so much again, Taryn. I love those NaNoWriMo tips. I'm going to print them out and put them on my desk. I especially love the one about the starting a sentence when you're really weary. So thanks again, and we'll look forward to your next book.
Thank you very much.
All right, everybody. We'll be right back with today's writing action.
Today's writing action is actually a sharing action inspired by this show. I'm super inspired by Taryn's story of posting his writing actually while he was writing a novel. So I would like to challenge you to post a story on a site where people read stories. And if you're comfortable doing this, also challenge yourself to promote your story as well, even if it's just with a single tweet. But don't only post, make sure you're engaging in the community as well, reading other people's stories, leave comments, make reading and writing friends, all that kind of stuff. And I'm going to provide a short list of sites to check out. These are just ones that I know about. I know there are many more out there, but Tapas is a great site. They sponsored NaNoWriMo last year, actually, as did Swoon Reads, a Macmillan imprint, which features YA novels in general. Inkit, Scribophile, Wattpad, which is Taryn's favorite. Medium, where I'm posting my blogs. I know there are a bunch of fan fiction sites out there, so just Google fan fiction sites and find the one that appeals to you. And then there are a bunch of new ones that I don't know much about, but I've heard about them. Radish, Cereal Box, Rooster, Plimpton, and I know there are many others out there. So please explore the internet and find the one that speaks to you. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and I hope you post your stories online.
Yeah, thanks so much, everybody. Right Minded is a weekly podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Download it on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, and please share it with a friend. Consider posting about it on social media or letting a writer that you know about us. We really appreciate it, and we will see you next week.